On TV, Avery Brooks is a tough guy. He played Hawk in the ABC detective series Spencer for Hire. Hawk was a mysterious, imposing character with a shaved head, dark glasses, and a big gun under his leather coat. Hawk always managed to intuitively show up in the nick of time to bail Robert Urich's Spencer out of a jam. When Spencer went off the air, Avery Brooks got his own spin-off series, A Man Called Hawk. It was canceled last season after 13 episodes. But the work Brooks is perhaps most serious about is the work he's least known for, his roles on the stage. In 1985, he starred as Malcolm X in the new music opera X. He's performed on and off Broadway with the Negro Ensemble Company and the New York Shakespeare Festival. In 1983, he starred in the one-man show Paul Robeson, and last year he opened in that show on Broadway. He's also taken the show on the road, and it will run in Philadelphia throughout the month of August. I asked Avery Brooks about the influence Paul Robeson had on his life when he was growing up.
Well, as a boy, I mean, among other people, I was just studying the history, you see, so that certainly the music that was all around me. So people like Paul Robeson, William Warfield, Marian Anderson, I mean, all the great singers, I mean, indeed, Brooke Benton, I mean, I could go on and on, Billy Eckstein, I'm very familiar with him, so. Paul Robeson is just logical in my growing up.
One of the songs that's most associated with Robeson is Old Man River, which he sang in Showboat, and I always thought of that song as such a kind of cliche type of song until I actually saw the 1936 movie with Robeson singing it, and yes. It was such a really incredible performance.
Indeed, indeed. I mean, he had such power.
Well, what's your reaction to singing the song? I mean, how do you handle it? I assume it's in the show.
Well, you see, my father used to sing it as well.
Oh, really?
He says, so there's a kind of, I can not help but think about my father every time I start to sing it. You know, in the way my father used to hold his hands, etc. I mean, let alone thinking about Robeson. But I mean, when I think about it in terms of Robeson, it is certainly his signature. But also, I can't help but think about his politics,
mm-hmm.
You see.
So. You said you were interested in Paul Robeson's politics. Now,
yes.
In 1978, when the show first was performed, it was criticized for trivializing Robeson. A petition was circulated that said, quote, "We regretfully feel compelled to take the extraordinary step of alerting all concerned citizens to what we believe to be, however unintended, a pernicious perversion of the essence of Paul Robeson." And that was signed by James Baldwin and Paul Robeson Jr., Maya Angelou, Julian Bond. And I think their reason for saying that was because in 1978, a lot of his politics were left out of the production. So what was your reaction to that criticism when you decided to take on the role?
Well, I didn't sign the petition either.
Right. Uh-huh.
Indeed,
Were you asked to?
Oh, no, not at all. I'm just saying I never signed it. In fact, I took my classes to see it. I mean, I think it's important that we reserve the right to celebrate the best of us without any kind of censorship at all. Indeed, the fact that Paul Robeson's memory has been virtually erased from the American scene, you know, it seems to cry, you know, I mean, very loudly for, you know, any information about him, you know, to celebrate him or to restore him so that when it came time for me to do it, I mean, when I was asked to do it, I didn't hesitate at all.
Well, I'd like to play you singing something that you sing in the show, but since I don't have a recording of that, let me play another recording that you're featured on, which is really a really fine recording. This is from a few years ago, although I don't remember exactly the date. 1978, I guess.
There it is.
Okay. And this is from an album with flutist James Spaulding. It's an album of Ellington songs.
Yes.
And this is you singing Come Sunday.
Yeah.
God Almighty, God of love, please look down and see my people. I believe that God put sun and moon up in the sky. I don't mind the gray skies, 'cause they're just clouds passing by.
Avery Brooks singing Come Sunday from an album recorded in 1978. And Avery Brooks is about to star again in a production of Paul Robeson. That production will be in Philadelphia. He also did the role on Broadway. And Avery Brooks is also probably known to you as Hawk from the series Spencer for Hire and the series A Man Called Hawk. Well, you come from really a long line of singers, or maybe not so long, but it seems like everyone in your immediate family sang.
Indeed.
See, your father was in the Wings Over Jordan.
Wings Over Jordan, that's right.
It was a gospel choir that had a show on CBS for a long time, CBS right. Radio. Your mother was a church pianist, organist, and choir director?
Well, I mean, quite an extraordinary musician. I mean, she played piano, organ, was a choral conductor, played violin, guitar, you know, taught voice. Extraordinary lady.
And someone in your family was a member of the Delta Rhythm Boys?
The original Delta Rhythm Boys, as a matter of fact, my mother's brother, Travers. In fact, I was telling someone earlier today, my mother used to write their arrangements in 1936. I mean, that's when they left Dillard and based themselves in South America, indeed in Brazil. And my mother, wherever they went in the world, would write the arrangements on onion skin paper and mail them to them.
Oh, that's great.
It's an extraordinary story.
So there was no separation in your family between secular and gospel music? Both
oh,
were
not
perfectly
at all.
Acceptable.
I mean, world music, you see.
And what music did you gravitate to yourself?
I gravitate to all music, actually. I mean, you know, the fact that we had such a wide exposure, you know, meant that we could not possibly limit ourselves. I mean, the fact of the matter is that that's what happened when I moved to theater, you know, and rather than limiting myself to calling myself an actor, I call myself a theater artist, and I still do, just as a musician should be able to play all music. And thus, as a theater artist, I think I should be able to do virtually anything.
Did you have trouble doing virtually anything? Was it hard to get the kinds of roles you wanted when you were starting out?
Well, I think it is important to know that, I mean, the opportunities in the historical of it are still not that, you know, abundant for people of color, indeed, black male folk, for example. But that I knew very early that I must create the things for myself. So I've always been doing that rather than wait for someone to give it to me.
Did you ever have to sing? I mean, like so many black singers and actors get started in, you know, Porgy and Bess or productions of Godspell or something.
Yeah, I mean, fortunately, I didn't have to do that.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, because I never listened. I guess that's probably what happened.
Listen to what kind of advice?
I never paid attention. I never paid attention to the voices that said I could not. As a matter of fact, I was compelled when someone said I could not. You know, it made me do more. You know, I just went on my own roads.
Well, you talk about creating opportunities for yourself, and you were, I think, good friends with many, like, new music composers and jazz composers, and you starred in a new music opera called X, which is an opera about Malcolm X, written by Anthony Davis. And you first played the role of Street, which was the character that introduced Malcolm X to street life, to crime, to gambling.
Yes.
And you were really magnetic.
I didn't see it, but thank you very much.
And then you played Malcolm afterwards. Now, it was an operatic role. You're not a trained opera singer.
Exactly.
What were some of the difficulties for you in singing a role written as opera?
Well, I suppose the primary thing is projection. I mean, you have to have the chops, you know, to fill up, you know, the Metropolitan. I mean, that's really the deal. And you know, you just can't just pop into it unless you have this extraordinary gift like Sarah Vaughan. I mean, and there are singers who can just do anything at any time. But dig, that I was interested in singing the role of Malcolm X to point out, and well, I'll say it bluntly, to make other opera singers angry, you see, because rather than standing there and singing, you know, and letting the music just flow. I mean, there's life. When you talk about Malcolm X, there is life, there's movement, there are all of these other things, which I know how to do. And when people witness it, you know, to witness the whole of it rather than just experiencing the music, we have to experience all of the vitality and the energy, et cetera, of it. So, I mean, it was almost like a challenge. And I said this to Anthony Davis. I said, let me sing it. And they'll get mad because the first thing they'll say is that he can't sing opera, you dig? Like that. So that's how it really happened.
Avery Brooks is my guest. Now, the story of how you ended up playing Malcolm X in the opera is a really incredible story. You were supposed to play X right? Then you got the role of Hawk,
right,
on the series Spencer for Hire.
Right.
And the person who was going to play Malcolm X got sick and couldn't play the role, so you ended up flying back and forth between Boston and Philadelphia.
Yeah.
Playing both roles at the same time, basically.
Yeah.
Let me just go back a little bit. When you were slated to star in this opera, mm-hmm. but at the same time were offered this role to play Hawk, was it a tough decision to make? Because you knew you'd have to sacrifice
the role
in the opera.
As it happened, the possibility of the series was always already in the works.
Oh, so you knew that this was a possibility.
It could have happened. Yeah. And so it did. I mean, the other thing about it is that I knew that I needed lots and lots of time to then, you know, really become the opera singer, you know, and I did not want to do any disservice to the work, you know, by trying to split time and holding the people, you know, mm-hmm. hostage for something that may or may not happen. But as it turned out, I ended up doing it anyway. So like that, it was, it didn't take much. For me to do it, after all, it's Malcolm X. I mean, when one talks about courage, I mean, you know, Malcolm X exhibited extraordinary courage. So, this notion of celebrating, you know, the culture of celebrating the great ones of us. I mean, the least that I can do is to give it some, you know, effort, you know, rather than shying away.
Had you auditioned for parts on TV before Hawk?
Of course. I've been straddling the fence, I mean, between the academic and the professional for many, many years.
Uh-huh. What kind of roles did you go up for?
Whatever roles were available. I mean, it's not as if, you know, you can pick and choose. I mean, what's interesting about this thing, the Hawk thing, you very rarely get a chance to read the entire script, you know, I mean, when you audition. And those of us who audition, you know exactly what I mean. So you see sides, and this is another one of these things that people bother you about. It was raining, sleeting, snowing, you know, it was one of those days, and I'm going in for the audition, and I'm saying, I'm not going to get this anyway. Why am I going in? You know what I mean? And they're bothering me again about it, but I did, and they called me back again, and I said to my wife, why are they bothering about this, huh? But it was one of these things that just happened. There's nothing extraordinary about the story. You know, there was nothing really spelled out in terms of the character. I mean, that's kind of classic. You know, again, in the historic, in the landscape of our history, that is, you know, that's very, very true. I mean, you know, the fact of the matter is that when people talk about black folk, indeed, or write about them, it's usually in some hieroglyphic fashion. I mean, it's kind of, you know, a kimosabi kind of language, et cetera, et cetera. Kind of embarrassing, actually. But this is just another one of these things, I thought.
So when you got the role, did you want to make changes in the character?
Sure.
What kind of changes did you make from the way it was originally conceived?
Well, I looked at, you know, at this that kind of cryptic, you know, language, this language that does not resonate in the culture.
Can you give me an example of a phrase? A
cryptic
phrase?
I would never do that. You know what I'm saying? To give away the writer's talent. But the fact of the matter is, I said, well, this does not resonate, you know, in the culture. Nobody's going to believe, you know, this urban black male is going to talk like this. Nobody's going to believe it, let alone me. I have to go home, for example. And nobody's going. So I said, please change this. Can you? He said, no. You don't understand. Your responsibility is to hit your mark and say your lines. From that moment forward, I didn't ask another question. I did not make another comment. I created it all on the spot. When the camera rolled, I made it up.
So you made up the lines as it
happened?
Well, let me play you an example of some Hawk dialogue.
Fine.
And this is a scene from the series Spencer for Hire, which was, by the way, based on the Robert B. Parker, a detective novel series. So this is a sequence between Hawk, played by my guest Avery Brooks, and the detective Spencer, played by Robert Urich. And this is part where Hawk is kind of giving the lowdown on a killer, someone who's just tried to shoot Spencer.
Still looking. Did find out one thing about the shootee. He shall not be mourned by many.
Slade?
Good detective, bad man. Uses his detecting skills to find out nasty information about folk, then charges them large sums of money not to detect anymore.
Blackmail? Blackmail Laurie, blackmail the Kincaids?
See, tired as you are, you still get that steel trap mine. You will convey my regrets to your blue suit friends. I have to find a man carrying my bullet in his body.
Lines like yours, like your blue suit friends refer to the police, is that
That's
that
exactly
yours?
Right, yeah. I mean, you know, all these things, I mean, I, you know, they're not particularly original. I mean, I, I, I'm quoting the culture all the time. I mean, Hawk is the baddest cat I know, you know, because he's certainly a composite of all of these bad dudes who have gone before. I mean, you can find him virtually in every epoch, every age, every era, like that.
Now, I understand that you wouldn't let your children watch the shows because they were too violent.
Well, you
is that right? I read that. You can tell me if it's true.
In these past several days, people have been asking me about this. I mean, you know, there might seem to be a double standard. I mean, after all, lots of children, I'm sure, watch the show. I mean, I know they do. I mean, the fact of the matter is that I decided, I mean, my wife and I decided that, you know, until we had the time to sit down with them, you know, and explain to them exactly what, you know, exactly what I was doing, et cetera, et cetera, you know, then we won't let them watch it. We taped everything, so it's available to them. So, simply said, I decided, well, not now, later.
Mm-hmm. Okay. My guest is actor Avery Brooks, who has starred as Hawk in Spencer for Hire and in A Man Called Hawk. He starred as Malcolm X in an opera called X, and he's now starring in Paul Robeson, a role that he did on Broadway and is about to do in Philadelphia. When you got the spinoff series, A Man Called Hawk, after Spencer for Hire was canceled, was that a kind of demonstration of the fact that the Hawk character caught on more than the Spencer character?
I don't know. I mean, I will say this. What an attractive character Hawk is. I mean, there's something very appealing about someone who is precise, someone who is decisive, someone who seems to be able to act, you know, no matter what, you know, someone who is that clear and who goes and comes when he pleases. I mean, what a wonderful thing. A chance again for us, you know, to at once to be children again. You know what I mean? No fuzz around it.
You sound like you miss him.
I like Hawk.
Yeah.
I like Hawk as much as anybody else. Again, I told you he's the baddest cat I know. Fact of the matter is, I doubted whether, when they asked about this Hawk show, whether people were really serious, that is, the network and the studio, really serious about doing it. You know, I mean, presenting a contemporary brown mythological hero on primetime television. You see, in our first news conference, for example, in California, we had journalists from all over the country, you know, people had... A number of journals had very strong feelings that that I could not I could not do this, but it was okay to have Superboy. You know what I'm saying? I mean, in the same breath, you dig what I'm saying? Or that I could not wear dark glasses at night. I mean, as if I was, you know, trying to be a clown or a buffoon. But Tom Mix never lost his hat in a fight. But you know what I'm saying? And the Lone Ranger wore a mask. I mean, we're talking about contemporary mythology. I mean, it is not innocuous either. It is very carefully plotted and manipulated and thought out. But, you know, why not is the point, you know.
When you started A Man Called Hawk, the spin-off series, were there certain personal touches you wanted in there? Certain things that were just you that you wanted in?
Oh, of course, not just me. I mean, the music.
Okay.
I wanted to that Hawk comes from the music. He is music. I mean, the way he walks. I mean, his dress. I mean, it's very, very musical. And so that I want music to be a character in the show. You know, as much as the city or whoever else was written, I mean, who had words. So I wanted the music to really play an important role in it. That was really the most important thing.
And you had a jazz composer, Butch Morris, doing all the music.
Oh, yeah, an extraordinary musician.
Not Morris, someone who's Butch gotten Morris. TV work before, I'm sure.
That's also the point. That's exactly the point.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, to break the cycle or break the tradition. I mean, an extraordinary array of musicians. And to have these great musicians on primetime television was such an extraordinary moment for me.
And did you change the character of Hawk?
No. No reason to. If it's not broke, don't fix it.
Good. Okay. I find it kind of paradoxical that you've become most famous for this, action kind of role. And the background that you're from is a background that is of such kind of highly educated families. There are so many firsts in your families in terms of education. Your father graduated from Tougaloo in 1901.
My mother's father. Yes,
okay,
my grandfather.
In 1901 or something. And your mother was the first.
She was one of the
black graduate of Northwestern or something.
Well, yeah, she got her MFA. Yes, in her master's in music, I should say. It wasn't MFA then. Master's in music, you know, I think circa 1938, you know, at a time when black people couldn't live on campus and nobody would even sit next to her in the classroom. But, I mean, she graduated summa cum laude, as a matter of fact.
Were your parents ever afraid of losing you to bad influences? Were they very protective of you?
Well, I mean, not any more than, you know, all parents are. I mean, and realizing, you know, to raise male children, I have an older brother. I mean, to confront that, even as I, you know, looked forward to having children, you know, I mean, the first thing that I said, you know, what am I going to tell my male children? You see what I mean? In a world, they're going to get ready to grow into a world that is not particularly interested in them living a long life. I mean, that's fact. You know, I mean, the history bears that out. But, you know, it is an extraordinary worry when I think about what I'm going to tell even my youngest son, who is now 18 months old. What am I going to tell him about what it means to be brown and male and in America? So it doesn't go away. I guess it is by the grace of God that I suppose I'm here.
Well, I want to thank you very much for talking with us about your work and your life. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much.